And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where everybody in this great nation has been and should be worried about the rate of violent crime. It is a problem that strikes everywhere in America. It strikes every family. It changes the way that we look at our cities, that we look at going downtown. It is devastating economically. It is devastating in terms of public health. There was another shooting, gang shooting in Chicago, where they had 11 people who were gathered outside a home who were basically mowed down. There's all kinds of news reports about horrible criminal activities. And yes, I'm not ignoring, and we shouldn't ignore, that terrible attack at a mall in Sydney, Australia, with not a firearms crime, but a knife crime by a perpetrator who was mentally ill and going after women. But there is this headline, and it's so welcome to see it. You kind of want to cut it out and scotch tape it to the refrigerator or something of that order. It's a piece in the Wall Street Journal, and it just released this morning. And it reports that homicides in America and in American cities across the country are falling at the fastest pace in decades, bringing them close to their levels before a pandemic-era jump. In 133 cities around the country, homicides in the first few months of 2024 were down around 20% from a year earlier, according to crime data analyst Jeff Asher, who tabulated statistics from police departments across the country. Killings in Philadelphia, as of April 12th, were down 35% from the same point last year. In New York, homicides were down 15% through April 7th. Homicides in Columbus, Ohio, were down 58%. The drop is an acceleration of a trend that began last year following a surge in the number of homicides during the COVID-19 pandemic. The declines in 2024 on top of last year's drop mirror the steepest declines since the late 1990s. Now, all of that is incredibly good news. And it's there and it should be recognized despite the fact that in Chicago, which continues to be a problem, over this weekend, there were 7 people who were killed. There were at least 43 who were shot. However, the decline from the COVID period of 2019, 2020, 2021, the decline has been extraordinarily welcome. So why? And they interviewed a criminology professor named Dean Dabney, who's a professor at Georgia State University. He says what happened is that the police went to sleep. The prosecution and the courts went to sleep. And the jails and prisons let people out. So you had an ideal situation for criminals. Now the police, he says, are more engaged and departments are working to hire more officers. Community-based crime prevention programs have resumed. They were canceled during COVID. And nationwide social unrest has cooled. It's not one single thing that makes that number fall. Here in D.C., and I'm sure it's like this in most cities, it's a collaboration of efforts, said Leslie Parsons, an assistant chief for the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C., where homicides this year have dropped 26% compared with 2023. In some cities, the homicide decline has been accompanied by a reduction in property crime. Crime researchers have been particularly struck by the drops in cities most plagued with violent crime in recent years. In the first half of 2022, New Orleans had the highest homicide rate of any major U.S. city, according to Wall Street Journal analysis of crime data. Through April 10th this year, the number of killings was down 39% from the same period in 2023. So let the good times roll. I'm happy for New Orleans. Meanwhile, here in Seattle, the police have announced that they're going to be monitoring the Israel-Iran conflict for community safety after drone attacks. On Sunday, yesterday, the Seattle Police Department announced they are closely monitoring the conflict between Israel and Iran. They're working with local and federal agencies to ensure the safety of Seattle community members. As a precaution, SPD said they will proactively increase patrols around infrastructures and sensitive areas. SPD's community liaisons are working with community leaders as a prevention measure. Currently, there are no specific credible threats, said SPD. Well, that's good news, too. And in terms of what happened in this attack, we play just a brief statement from Admiral John Kirby, the White House security spokesman. And he also said, this is clip 17B, Jeremy. He also had this to say about what Iran was trying to do. Listen.
I'd like to take just a few minutes to correct the record on a few points that have come out in the last several hours. I've seen reporting that the Iranians meant to fail, that this spectacular and embarrassing failure was all by design. I've also seen Iran say that they provided early warning to help Israel prepare its defenses and limit any potential damage. All of this is categorically false. To coin the phrase from the president, or steal a phrase from the president, it's malarkey. This attack failed because it was defeated by Israel, by the United States, and by a coalition of other partners committed to Israel's defense. So let's be straight. Given the scale of this attack, Iran's intent was clearly to cause significant destruction and casualties. Iranian leaders launched so many missiles and other munitions because they knew that many were going to be defeated. But the aim was to get as many of them through Israel's defenses as possible.
Okay, and they obviously did not succeed in that aim. There's also a brief comment from Senator Fetterman of Pennsylvania on CNN with Jake Tapper, clip 15.
It's astonishing that we are not standing firmly with Israel, and there should never be any kinds of conditions on all that. When a nation can launch hundreds of drones towards Israel, and I'm not going to be talking about conditions ever. And second, I think that also was Iran had to have some fireworks after Israel smoked that Iranian general, and I'm here for that. And I think it's just a matter of theater part of it as well, too. And it demonstrates how unstable things are and why we need to lean in and stand with Israel.
And amen to that, Senator Fetterman. Who expected him to become such a strong spokesman for sanity? There's also apparently progress soon to be made, thank God, finally, by the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, in getting a vote through to provide the aid that's already been promised to Israel. And yes, of course, to Ukraine. We will be right back with more on the war at home. Is it really a war with the pro-Palestinian protesters? We will get to that on The Medved Show.
Your outlet for outrage.
I'm not going to take this anymore.
The Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, there is a piece by General Kenneth F. McKenzie Jr. General McKenzie is a retired U.S. Marine general who served as commander of U.S. Central Command from 2019 to 2022. He is now executive director of the Global and National Security Institute at the University of South Florida. And he writes under the Wall Street Journal and the Wall Street Journal today, Iran's attack is a show of weakness. And what he comments, and it's very important to put this into the right context. For the U.S., the successful defense of Israel validates years of work to create an integrated air and missile defense, an effort that brought together many nations that all recognize the threat of Iran. It also vindicates the decision to move Israel from European command into Central Command, which covers the rest of the region. The seamless coordination and mutual support that this enabled was evident under demanding circumstances, meaning the attacks of this weekend on Saturday night, Sunday morning. Iran's overriding strategic priority is protecting the theocratic regime. Fundamental to this, writes General McKenzie, was a conventional missile and drone force that could overpower its neighbors. This failure shakes the regime's stability. In conducting this latest attack, it has shed the last check on its ambitions. Iran will attack any regional nation anywhere, without pretense or deniability. The downside for Iran's targets is that once a nation has conducted an attack of this nature, it is politically easier to do it again. What's next? The initiative has shifted to the Israelis. The gap between Israeli competence and Iranian aspirations is clear, even to the Iranians, despite their attempts to put a brave face on their failure. Israel's neighbors will certainly see the effectiveness of its defense. Israel could unleash a violent and decisive counterstrike against Iran. Some are calling for Israel to destroy the Iranian nuclear enterprise. Now isn't the time for that, writes General McKenzie, and I think he's right. What's needed is a carefully calibrated response on a scale that reinforces Israeli technical mastery. That would reset deterrence. Informed observers, whatever their sympathies, all know who won this engagement. The hard part, as always, is translating battlefield success into lasting policy advantage and an opportunity for peace. That's the task for Israel. The point about peace here, it's fascinating that some of the demonstrations, pro-Hamas demonstrations that have been going on around the country. For instance, there was a moment in Toronto where the participants of an anti-Israel protest found out yesterday, in the midst of their protest, that Iran had launched suicide drones against Israel. And this is what it sounded like when they begin chanting about a ceasefire to then cheering for Iran's attack on Israel. This is from Canada, but still, it's clip one.
Israel has bombed multiple countries.
Okay, this I don't know what time they went home, the demonstrators in Toronto, but there were also demonstrators in the San Francisco Bay Area, pro-Palestinian protesters who shut down the Golden Gate Bridge just hours after a similar protest closed all lanes on I-880 in Oakland on the other side of San Francisco Bay. This is a report from ABC7, clip 14.
Along the Golden Gate Bridge, as you can see, mid-span, one side of the Golden Gate Bridge was shut down by these protesters. The other side is also shut down, but it appears as if it's shut down so that police can access this protest.
The goal, it seems, of just getting eyes and attention to Gaza.
They have their arms in the pipes, just like they do on A80, but I can't really tell what they're doing with these cars.
Yeah.
If that's their strategy, I don't know if it's a... It feels like maybe they're just doing sort of like a across-the-car link there. But they're not attached to any of those big concrete barrels. So to me, this seems like this would be faster to clear.
Faster to clear? Imagine if you're waiting. One of the things that has been positive is some of the demonstrators who had closed down parts of I-5 in Seattle for, I think it was more than 5 hours, are facing some appropriate consequences in terms of prosecution. And meanwhile, at today's White House press briefing, a reporter asked John Kirby, Admiral Kirby, about Biden's warning to Tehran to not launch an attack on Israel. A warning, of course, that Iran ignored. This is clip 16. And on the Michael Medved Show, we're talking about a question that was asked by Admiral John Kirby today at the press briefing at the White House about President Biden having given a warning to Tehran not to attack Israel, a warning that, of course, was ignored very much to Iran's detriment because the attack was so spectacularly unsuccessful. And listen to this interchange. It's clip 7.
Could this administration have been tougher on Iran? Did it sense an opening?
It's hard to look at what President Biden has done with respect to Iran and say that he hasn't been tough on Iran, that we haven't put pressure on them, that we haven't additional 500 sanctions, additional resources in the region. And let's take a look at that ballistic missile. Okay, so they launched more than 100 ballistic missiles. And how many got through? And the reason they didn't get through is because President Biden made sure that we pre-positioned forces in the region to help Israel shoot them down. So this vaunted ballistic missile program of theirs didn't turn out to be so vaunted last night.
But why not support something that would have stopped that program or at least contained it in some way so it's not launching at Israel and we aren't having to get it involved defensively?
Again, Shannon, just look at the sanctions that we put in place against Iran. Look at the resources we put in this into the region. It's hard to take a look at what President Biden has done and say that we've somehow gone soft on Iran. It was the previous administration that decided to get us out of the Iran deal, and now Iran is so much dramatically closer to a potential nuclear weapon capability than they were before Mr. Trump was elected.
Okay. There was also commentary that appeared on Fox News. Trey Gowdy had on the exiled crown prince of Iran, Reza Pahlavi, and he spoke about the solution being to put more pressure on Iran. Listen, this is
look, when you release money to a regime and give it more means to finance its proxies and use brutality at home, basically appeasement has proven that it only emboldens the regime. We said that a long time ago. In fact, as you indicated last year when I visited Israel, part of our discussions with Israeli leaders, and for that matter, other leaders around the world, has been precisely this. If you let the regime be emboldened by the fact that they can count on appeasement or paying ransom for the release of hostages or not imposing oil sanctions, which gave the regime almost an extra $100 billion. The fact that the current administration is trying to release even yet more money to the regime, about $10 billion of Iranian electricity revenue from the Iraqis, what do you think is going to happen next? I think there's a direct correlation between appeasement and doing these kind of things and the regime becoming emboldened. The solution, again, is to use every opportunity to put more pressure on the regime.
Okay, again, putting more pressure on the regime, the most intense pressure and meaningful pressure has been from the revelation that Saudi Arabia, which is the Sunni power, that is the direct balance and counterpart and rival with Iran, that Saudi Arabia and other Sunni nations like Jordan were actually involved in the defense of Israel with this latest attacks. That is, however it worked out, remarkable. And I do think it's impossible not to give the administration some credit for having dispatched American resources and destroyers and aircraft carriers and the ability of positioning aircraft that could be involved very directly in shooting down the military resources that Iran was hoping would inflict terrible impact on the Israelis. The Bernie Sanders picked a very bad time to demand that the U.S. cut off Netanyahu and his government, his extremist government, until Gaza conditions improve. And again, you don't cut off a government. You'd be cutting off an entire nation. And this was Bernie Sanders indicating one of many reasons, including his age, that his presidential dreams are not going to ever bear fruit, thank goodness. This is Senator Sanders.
As you know, there is a supplemental bill that passed the Senate against my vote. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I was the only member of the Senate to vote against that, specifically because of $14 billion in there going to Israel, including $10 billion, $10 billion for unfettered military aid. Another amount of money went for the defense, for the Iron Dome and so forth, what I can live with. But the idea of giving Netanyahu another $10 billion to continue this war seems to me to be totally absurd. That bill is now in the House of Representatives. God knows what goes on in the House of Representatives, if they're able to do anything. But that is where it is right now. And I would hope that my colleagues in the House will say, no, Israel does not deserve another nickel at this point.
Okay, the bill was already approved with 70 senators voting for it overwhelmingly. And I believe that the point of view that that Senator Sanders is now expressing is less credible than ever before. Speaking of less credible than ever before, President Trump took his campaign to Western Pennsylvania, and he was at Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and ruminating eloquently on the Battle of Gettysburg, which I don't think President Trump actually knows that much about. But he had this to say over the weekend. This is clip 13.
The Union was saved by the immortal heroes at Gettysburg. Gettysburg, what an unbelievable battle that was, the Battle of Gettysburg. What an unbelievable, I mean, it was so much and so interesting and so vicious and horrible and so beautiful in so many different ways. It represented such a big portion of the success of this country. Gettysburg, wow. I go to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania to look and to watch. And the statement of Robert E. Lee, who's no longer in favor, did you ever notice that? No longer in favor. never fight uphill, me boys, never fight uphill. They were fighting uphill. He said, wow, that was a big mistake. He lost his great general, and they were fighting. Never fight uphill, me boys, but it was too late.
Never fight uphill, me boys? I don't think that Morris Robert, as he was known, that Robert E. Lee, I mean, and first of all, that was Lee's crucial mistake, was sending in the third day of the battle Pickett's charge uphill. That was a bad idea. So, again, describing Gettysburg as a beautiful battle, I'm not sure. He said he loves to go to Gettysburg to learn and watch. And has he been there for reenactments? Has he ever been there? When I was in college, and I've written about this several times, with a friend of mine, and I wasn't totally alone, but it was the two of us. My buddy and I took a hitchhiking trip to Pennsylvania, and it was late at night, and we couldn't get a ride, and it said Gettysburg, 3 miles away. So we walked and we slept on the battlefield. And yes, that battlefield, I am convinced, is haunted by history. Not necessary to say more right now, but more will come here on the Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, one of the interesting things that occurred at that rally in Pennsylvania, in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where President Trump spoke over the weekend, and one of the points that he made was, of course, blaming the attack on Israel on the Biden administration, where, by the way, the Biden administration has done plenty of stupid things and mistakes and miscalculations, but the handling of this latest Iranian attack on Israel has been successful. And why not acknowledge it, for God's sake? I mean, putting together a coalition of forces involving the forces of Great Britain and of France and of Jordan, the Kingdom of Jordan. And by the way, there's background here, and I do think it's important that people have some awareness of it, is that the longtime King of Jordan, who actually ended up making peace with Israel, and there is a peace treaty between Israel and Jordan, which has been remarkably beneficial for both countries. But part of that is because the previous king, the grandfather of King Hussein, who was a longtime king of Jordan, was King Abdullah I, who was murdered. Not by Israelis, not by Zionists, not by American agents. He was murdered by Palestinian fanatics because he wanted to make peace. He was murdered at Al-Aqsa, coming out of Al-Aqsa Mosque after Friday prayers back in 1951 when Israel was only 3 years old. But that's one of those episodes that people need to know about, and part of that history that people need to know about. And the fact is that the Jordanian regime has been menaced many times, going back to the Black September incident of 1970, but many times by Palestinian fanatics. In any event, What President Trump alleged in Pennsylvania is that the Iranian attacks would not have occurred if he were president. Listen.
Going any further, I want to say God bless the people of Israel. They're under attack right now. That's because we show great weakness. This would not happen. The weakness that we've shown is unbelievable, and it would not have happened if we were in office. You know that. They know that. Everybody knows that. But America prays for Israel. We send our absolute support to everyone in harm's way. This is an attack that would not have happened. I mean, to think about what we have to go through and the things we put up with the border, with no energy independence, with all electric cars. Would everybody like to buy an electric car for the rest of you? But we will return the world to peace through strength, and it'll happen very quickly. I will revive American strength abroad, and we will restore American strength at home. We were respected 4 years ago all over the world. Today, we are considered a joke. It's not going to be for long.
Okay, again, the idea that America is considered a joke, and this at a time when our outstanding military has just had one of the greatest successes of recent years, which has to be in this defense of Israel. The other question was, do you remember one of Trump's unquestioned triumphs? It was a good thing, was when he ordered the assassination, and it was an assassination, of Qasem Soleimani, who was a kingpin of the whole proxy war that Iran had been conducting against Israel and against the United States. And when he says that none of this would be necessary if I were in office, what about all of the attacks on American resources that had provoked Trump to knock off Soleimani? And by the way, and after they did knock off Soleimani, there were other Iranian attacks on Americans stationed in Syria and Iraq, and that caused significant injury, but Trump let it lie there. There was also in Pennsylvania a really disturbing little incident involving the audience chanting Genocide Joe about Biden. This is clip 18.
Is this war on American energy, and Pennsylvania energy is our big problem.
Genocide Joe!
They're not wrong. They're not wrong. He's done everything wrong.
They're not wrong? That they want to blame Biden and, by implication, Israel for what they call genocide? And the absurdity of the application of the word genocide to talk about what's going on in Gaza is so bizarre, because what genocide means is an attempt to reduce or eliminate, to reduce the population based upon a given ethnic or religious persuasion. And if you look at the population of Gaza, there's been no genocide going on. The population has increased. The life expectancy had increased. And again, what they are believing when they are chanting Genocide Joe is not propaganda that is simply anti-Biden. It is propaganda that is profoundly anti-Israel and anti-American as well. And when people are chanting Genocide Joe and Trump is saying they're not wrong, what does that say about his basic reaction to the struggle that's going on. And it is a struggle. And a struggle right now, writes Brett Stevens this morning, that should drive home a clear lesson to Iran's leaders. They are no technological match for the Jewish state, especially when the United States is lending a hand. If Israel decides to respond to the attack with direct strikes on Iran, perhaps against its installations, nuclear sites, or military infrastructure, it isn't likely to miss its targets. Iran's attack, writes Brett Stevens, and the Biden administration's laudable participation in Israel's defense is an opportunity for Benjamin Netanyahu to mend frayed ties in Washington and other Western capitals by showing restraint. Among other things, it can help move the House of Representatives finally to vote for the Ukraine-Israel military assistance package that the Senate approved in February with 70 votes, by the way. It also buys Israel time to destroy what remains of Hamas's military forces in Gaza. None of this is to say that Israel should simply stand down. Israel will find opportunities to hit its enemies where it hurts, at a time of its choosing. So, of course, will Iran. But Iran would do that anyway. Israel's diplomatic facilities have always been vulnerable to Iranian attacks, as have civilian Jewish targets. We were reminded of it again on Thursday when an Argentine court finally held Iran responsible for the 1994 attack on a Jewish cultural center in Buenos Aires that killed 85 people and injured hundreds. This context involving a country that used to have a substantial Jewish community and have good relations with Israel, the Islamic Revolution destroyed all of that. We'll put some of that history in even better context coming up in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.